we stay, like Adam and Eve, waterfall, Garden of Eden, two fools in love, so beautiful and strong. The birds in the trees are smiling upon them. Since the age of the dinosaurs, cars have run on gasoline. Where have they gone now? There's nothing but flowers. This was a factory. Now there's just mountains and rivers. You got it. We caught a rattlesnake. Now we got something for dinner. You got it. There was a shopping mall. Now it's all covered with flowers. You got it.
Hello, and welcome to Living the Green Life, a show about making sustainability accessible and part of your everyday life. Today is Saturday, February 10th. I'm Sarah Jane Compton.
And I'm Lindsay Crum, and together we're your Green Life gurus.
We'll start the show with upcoming events in our area. In Fairfield County, catch it on its penultimate day, the Bartlett Arboretum Art Exhibits Inspired by Nature. From a series of etchings inspired by Noguchi's large rock sculpture in Storm King Art Center, to delicate linear flowers, to abstractions of nature and plant life, Margot Bittenbender explores the various facets of the natural world through two differing media, the intaglio print and photography. Visit bartlettarboretum.org for more information.
In New Haven County, come to the Yale China Lunar Fest on Saturday, February 17th. LunarFest is a day-long event in New Haven, offering educational and cultural programs for adults and children of all ages in celebration of the Lunar New Year. The breadth of programs offered throughout the day, music, food, performances, martial arts, language learning, lectures, and a parade, aims to increase understanding of and create exposure to Chinese culture. This year's theme of People to People highlights aspects of Chinese daily lives and celebrates the new sister city relationship between New Haven and Changsha, the capital city of Hunan.
And you can stop by the New Haven Free Public Library to see my mother, Jeanette Compton's exhibit, Nature in New Haven, now until March 30th. In Long Island, get crafty tomorrow, February 11th, at the Animal Tracks and Craft Workshop at the South Fork Natural History Museum and Nature Center at 2 p.m. Winter is one of the best times to see animal tracks left behind in the snow. Animals are not always seen, but you can still tell that they're around based on their footprints. Join for a brief walk about Vineyard Field to find animal tracks. Following the walk, children will make their very own footprint depression using plaster. Visit SOFO.org for more information.
On today's show, we'll be talking about food waste. You might have already heard the sad statistic that about 40% of the food produced in the United States every year never makes it to the table.
That's a sad statistic.
That's so bleak.
Yeah. According to the EPA, food waste is divided into two categories: food that is fit for human consumption and that which is not. Food that is okay to eat, wholesome and nutritious, is often called wasted, surplus, or excess food. It's not spoiled and is oftentimes unsold from stores or is made up of trimmings from restaurants or food processing. Food waste is often given to animals as feed, is composted, or sent to an anaerobic digester. Basically, microorganisms break down the food waste in an environment without oxygen.
The EPA has also come up with a cool food recovery hierarchy. So think about the food pyramid, but turn it upside down. By following that hierarchy, we can help prevent and divert wasted food. The pyramid is divided into two sections: source reduction, so that's the beginning, and feed hungry people. These levels are the preferred ways for food recovery as they create the most benefits for the environment, society, and the economy.
Source reduction is as easy as making grocery lists, inventorying supplies, and simply buying less. The EPA notes that these tactics help prevent pollution from food production. Think about chemicals, energy, and transportation savings. They help reduce methane from landfills, and they save labor by being more efficient. By going trayless, adding signage, and allowing students to taste test sample menu items before taking their dish, the University of Texas at Austin decreased their food waste 48%, according to a success story from the EPA.
Second on the hierarchy is feed hungry people. The EPA reported over 38 million tons of wasted food thrown away in the United States in 2014, while 12% of American households, about 41 million people, had a tough time providing enough food in 2016. Campus Kitchens, Food Recovery Network, and Rock and Wrap It Up are all organizations where you can donate excess food. Food Forward went from saving 4.7 million pounds of fruits and veggies in 2014 and 8.8 million in 2015 and helped send produce to over 300 hunger relief agencies in Southern California.
The third tier is Feed Animals. The rules of feeding animals food waste can be a little tricky, so if you're really interested, you can check out the Swine Health Protection Act and Leftovers for Livestock Guide. You can contact your local agricultural extension office if you want to know more. Rutgers partnered with Pinter Farms to give them 1 ton of food scraps every day, which helps feed the hungry hogs and the cattle. And sending the scraps to the Pinter Farms was half the price of sending the scraps to the landfill. That's what I call a win-win.
I would call it a win-win, too. Mm-hmm. Fourth on our list is landfill. As we mentioned before, anaerobic digestion is an option which also creates biofuel and bioproducts. Fats, oil, and grease can wreak havoc on pipes and pumps. It's better to turn them into another product. By rendering, liquid fats can be made into animal food, cosmetics, or soap. Biodiesel can be made from soybean, waste cooking oil, or bio-waste feedstock, and biodiesel creates less pollution than typical diesel. East Bay Municipal Utility District collected food waste from restaurants and markets, broke it down in an anaerobic digester, and uses the captured methane to power the treatment plant.
And last but not least is composting, where things that were never edible, like yard waste, can turn into a product to help nourish the soil, says the EPA. And composting rates are on the rise in the U.S., from 0.4 pounds per person per day to 1.1 in 2014. As you already know if you've heard our first show on composting, compost helps to reduce fertilizer use, helps improve soil quality, and reduces methane from landfills. Connecticut DEEP has a great resource page on composting. Check it out to learn more.
And do you want a food scrap DIY idea?
Of course.
We love our DIYs over here. The next time you eat an orange, cut the peel in half so you have two orange peel bowls, essentially. Fill each with a candle wick and oil, and voila, you have an instant candle. Or, if you prefer apples.
Which I do.
Really? I prefer oranges. So I'll do the first one, you do this one. Mm-hmm. So if you prefer apples, you can take the core and peels, place them in a pot with a cup of water, bring it to a boil, remove the peels, add a cup of sugar, cook until it's foaming, and you have yourself some apple jam. Mm-hmm.
Today we'll be speaking with Luke Dang from Food LLC. That's P-H-O-O-D. Luke Dang is the Chief Executive Officer of Food LLC, a food waste prevention company that helps food businesses create cost savings by cutting their food waste in half. Food provides waste tracking software that helps businesses track and reduce food waste while connecting eligible food to recovery partners in the community. Luke, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure to be here.
Luke, why don't we begin by having you tell us a bit about what got you interested in food waste?
Absolutely. So, you know, this really kind of started off at a young age. I grew up with my mother on a farm, and we really didn't waste anything. We had bees with honey. We did maple syrup. We had chickens and eggs. And it was just something where, you know, we were just kind of taught. It was almost intuitive by the time that I started working in a restaurant and starting to see that end of the night, we had a lot of overproduction. There was some spoilage, some expiration, but a lot of it was just, you know, being overproduced. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I got to university that I really heard some of the statistics that were going around through the EPA or the NRDC, and that's the Environmental Protection Agency or the National Resource Defense Council, mm-hmm. really outlining that 40% of all of the food produced in the United States is wasted every year. And to be honest, I didn't really believe that. I thought that it was a little bit high. You know, yeah. You don't really hear about a wasted efficiency in any industry without any large changes being made, right? Mm-hmm. So I started working with a couple different universities here in Connecticut and kind of had asked, and other institutions as well, you know, what's the food waste look like here? And, you know, it's amazing that the answer was overwhelmingly positive. It was, you know, we're doing a great job, we're composting, we're donating. And I was really relieved. I said, that's fantastic. So compared to the national average, what are you guys if it's 40%, are you guys 30 or 20? And I found out that not too many people knew. They thought that they were doing a great job, but they didn't actually have any of the tools to quantify or measure. And so we kind of came up with this idea that you can't really manage what you don't measure. And so even if you're really good at something, you need to be able to have the tools to quantify that. And so that's really how we started looking at how we can leverage waste tracking analytics for source reduction, and then also looking at some of those other prevention methods as well.
Well, I think you sort of teed up where we're going next, which is to ask you what inspired you to begin food and how exactly it works.
Exactly. So it was, you know, really from gleaning from all of those different sources that helped provide the impetus to kind of drive this forward. Each food business, consumer-facing business, whether it was a grocery store, a hospital, a college or university, a fast casual, fast dining restaurant, all had this same ubiquitous problem. And so it was kind of with speaking with them that I realized that, you know, food needed to exist. And so we started working with even scales that they had in their kitchens. We would place a tablet with our software running on it, and we would load up their menus. And every time they would have any overproduction, expiration, spoilage, or even a quality issue, they would simply just weigh it and then dispose of that. And we've progressed in the last 4 years from that, where we actually have four scales. And essentially how it works is we place those into a kitchen underneath a compost bin or trash receptacle. And anytime an item is disposed of as it normally would be, just tossed, the scale actually detects that weight difference. And that's actually set right to the tablet where their menu is already populated either through their POS system or menu management. And they will just simply select the item and walk away. That data is then aggregated on the cloud so they can log into our web app, which is just a website, and they can actually see waste trended over time. What are the top wasted items? What is it, you know, is there any seasonality? Is it a particular day of the week? And what are those reasons? Are we just buying too much, producing too much, or are we having refrigeration issues or transportation issues where we're purchasing this food, but by the time it gets to us, we're losing out on a small percentage of it? And really helping them look at those actual insights to start making changes and preventing and reducing.
That's really incredible. If you are just tuning in, this is Living the Green Life with Lindsay Crum and Sarah Jane Compton. So we talked a little bit about how much food is getting wasted and how to start tracking the food waste in order to maybe make some concerted effort to change. But starting at the beginning, why do you think food waste is such a big problem in the United States in the first place? What do you think is contributing to this 40%?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and I oftentimes ask myself as well. You know, I think my best guess is, you know, I think we're just a nation of things. Everything from our social media's ephemeral yet instant gratification nature to, you know, Amazon Prime's like 2-day shipping, right? We're gluttonous for our things, and we want them, and we want them now. I think we kind of, you know, keep that same mentality when we go through to the grocery store or go out to eat, and, you know, we see these things. You know, everyone knows the term, or should know the term, YOLO, you only live once, you know, or FOMO, a fear of missing out. In the food service realm, I think that there's FORO, F-O-R-O, which is fear of running out. And so for commercial and non-commercial businesses, I think that it's a, you know, customer priority which comes first, and that's making sure that they never want to run out. You know, at a university where you're having students that are usually on an all-you-care-to-eat or buffet-style dining, you know, you don't want to get a call from somebody's mom saying, hey, you know, why didn't little Jimmy get his chicken nuggets when I pay $55,000 a year? And so those are all things that we have to accept and understand, but also mitigate where applicable.
That's great. And so do you have any tactics for overcoming this fear of running out?
So, I mean, for us, it really breaks down into the, you know, pre-consumer, mm-hmm. which is really at commercial, non-commercial food businesses, and then post-consumer, which is just really, you know, you, Lindsay, and Sarah, myself, you know, just kind of the eyes bigger than stomach syndrome, right?
Mm-hmm. When we go into the grocery store.
Yeah. Do you guys, you know, so let me ask you guys a question. Do you guys think that you waste a lot of food in the home?
I may waste a little more than Sarah Jane. I think Sarah Jane's probably really good about it.
I'm very good at home, but when I'm ordering for work or for larger parties, catering, etc., I always overorder, and I always think I'm underordering, and I hardly ever order when there's absolutely nothing left. And
right.
It's really hard because when I'm ordering from various businesses, everybody has a different idea of what
a portion
size is.
Yeah.
So you just kind of have to guess. You know, I usually under order, and I always usually guess that 10% of the people won't show up to the meeting. But I think I need to guess closer to 20 or 25%. I don't know.
Yeah. So there was a figure that was pushed out. I believe it was a collaboration. So I don't want to list any one entity because I'm not too sure. But I think it's like the average family of four wastes about $1,500 in food every year. And so if you look at that, I think it's somewhere between 20 and 25%. So if you're, you know, I think there was one analogy that was told to me where that's like going to the grocery store, getting four bags of groceries, walking up to the parking lot and accidentally dropping one of them, and then just kind of shrugging it off and walking to your car. And it's like, we would never do that, right?
Right.
So yeah, I think that some tactics, as you mentioned, I'd say, you know, it's tough because a lot of them just seem extremely intuitive, like, you know, planning, making a list. You know, I have to say, I recently used for a holiday party, Save the Food through Ad Council has a great tool called the guest-mater, so guestimator.
Oh.
And you actually can go through and you can look at the particular meal that you're wanting to prepare. You can put in the number of guests and you can actually select for each guest. It's a small eater, a medium-sized eater, or, you know, a big eater.
Yeah.
And it actually gives you great recommendations, whether or not you want leftovers and how much to produce. And prepare. And so it's actually worked really well. And it has a great intuitive interface. And so that's, you know, a tool that consumers can definitely leverage and I would recommend.
That's a great resource. And I was going to ask for just any other suggestions for resources you might have for our listeners who are just interested in educating them about food waste, either in terms of how to reduce their own food waste or just to learn more about this subject in general.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think of some films that I've seen recently or that I've been told about. So I know Wasted, the story of food waste, is great. Just Eat It is another one. So those are both online. There's a couple different providers that have that as well. There actually might be a couple even on Netflix. So I would say, like, you know, those are very easily accessible. And they really kind of give a great kind of a broad overview of the problem at whole. So everywhere from the farm to manufacturing to consumer-facing businesses when we go out to eat and to our home.
Well, those are some great tips. And I am really interested and curious. You know, you mentioned growing up on a farm. And I'm just wondering how else, you know, in addition to the fact that you didn't waste anything, and that was a lesson that you learned really clearly growing up on a farm, are there any other sort of key takeaways from that experience that you had? I just think that's really cool.
Yeah. You know, I'm trying to think. It was really kind of just because we were, and also just as a disclaimer, so I say farm and we had chickens and goats and horses. It wasn't, you know, we didn't have the full range.
That sounds like a farm.
Yeah.
That sounds like a definition of a farm.
That's legitimate.
It depends on who you ask. I've had friends over before and they're like, you know, they have their smartphones out ready to take photos. They're like, this isn't a farm. No, so I think it was just because, you know, you're going out into the chicken coop every day and you're getting the eggs. I mean, it was just something, I mean, you saw where the food was coming from.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is something that, I mean, gosh, we've been seeing this for the last 10 plus years with the local food movement, right? And I think that this is where the food waste movement is going to be going.
Mm.
It's just, you know, people care about where it's coming from. And so really seeing that, to throw away eggs or honey or maple syrup, that you actually had to curate, that you actually had to go and harvest. Those are things that it's really difficult. And so when I was working in a restaurant, I mean, that was something where, you know, nobody likes to throw away food.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, I said sort of in jest before that, like, oh, Sarah Jane's better than I am at, you know, not wasting food. But I admit I feel like a physical pang if I have to throw some food away. And I think it has everything to do with your point of, no, like, this came from somewhere. This was sourced from somewhere. And, you know, it's not, I don't tend to buy packaged food. It's generally, like, fresh, good produce. Right. And that's something that... You just, it just hurts to waste stuff like that, I would say.
To find wilted lettuce leaves is very, very sad.
Depressing, really depressing.
Absolutely. I mean, it's also, you know, circumstances. So I live alone in Boston where I can go to the gym after work and there's a local market, supermarket right at the corner. So I can, you know, kind of shop day to day. And so that way there, I can kind of see what I have available and what I need. And that's a luxury for me. Mm. I don't know if everyone has that. I think it's a little bit different when you have larger families and you're trying to plan out and nobody wants to go to the grocery store every day. So I think that there's things where it really does come down to the planning and down to the individual. But I think keeping tally of that, we've had many people ask, like, oh, can we get a smaller scale and put it in our kitchen? Mm. And to be honest, we've been considering it. It's definitely the demand and the need is there.
Right, especially that imaginary one grocery bag, you know, versus of, what did you say, $1,500 that we're wasting, the average family? Yeah.
Of four, yes.
Yeah. So do you have anything else to add for our listeners?
Yeah, so I guess I'm just curious. So when it comes to food waste, what are some of the things that you guys have been hearing of interest from either listeners or from kind of your family, friends, or the cohort whom you work with?
Sure. So a lot about what we talked about earlier in the show was the EPA hierarchy of what to do with food waste, which I don't know if you're familiar with.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
So we focus on really source reduction and donation, feeding hungry people, which are pretty much at the top there. But we also work with some haulers for composting and ultimately looking to see if we can push that out to industrial uses like anaerobic digestion before going to the landfill.
Right.
The only other thing that I find interesting there is date labeling. And that's something where I don't know if you guys are like me. Every time I go into the supermarket, I'm looking at all these labels. And, you know, I'm lactose intolerant, so I'm looking at lactate milk or lactose-free milk. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's something that I go through often. And it's like, even on the same package, you know, the same brand, at the same store, one will say Best Buy, another will say Use By. Mm-hmm. And so I find it very confusing. A lot of people ask me that, and I say it's very difficult. Those are printed by my manufacturers. They're, you know, it's not very well regulated, and everyone's confused. And so, you know, we have so many people that are going through in their fridge, opening up, and just looking at that one, you know, figure, and then making an entire decision of disposing of, you know, a whole item or a good amount of it just off of that. And I know that has definitely caused a lot of frustration.
Yeah. And I think, now, of course, I don't remember the title of the movie, and it could have been Wasted or Just Eat It. It was a documentary about food waste. But the information from that movie was that none of those Best Buy or Use By dates are regulated, with the exception of baby formula. So they're just general suggestions. And I don't want to give any advice. I personally don't really pay attention to those dates, and I go by my sense of sight and smell.
Yeah.
And use my common sense.
And the chunk factor.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But that's what I use personally.
Yeah. I think that's something that we should be doing more of. You go in and you kind of just take a sniff, and, you know, if you can't really tell, you know, it's something that maybe you can go with, but yeah.
Right. And also there's the educational component of it too, of knowing if an egg is good, if it floats or if it sinks. I feel like not a lot of people know that, but maybe growing up on a farm, you might be more aware of that.
Absolutely.
You know?
Or, you know, sometimes treating a lot of your greens, you know, like you would a floral arrangement and kind of, you know, cutting the ends, putting them in water.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. And kind of looking at best practices for various items.
Right.
So, I mean, I still get in arguments with friends over whether tomato, avocados, or fruits or vegetables, let alone whether or not they should be put in the refrigerator on the counter.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yes.
And then there's also another tactic I've learned is where to place items in your refrigerator. I don't know if you heard of this one.
No, I don't think I have.
Right. So there are colder and warmer spots depending on how your refrigerator is set up based on where your freezer is. So there are, you know, spots on the door. You should have items that you're kind of less worried about them spoiling faster because they're exposed to more air every time you open and close the refrigerator. And then I believe the top of the refrigerator is the warmest spot.
Really? Even so if the freezer's right above?
Even if the freezer is above, it might be backwards. So
okay.
mine's on the bottom. Okay, so I know it's the warmest spot.
I feel like it's the coldest for
yeah.
me.
So you should put dairy products in the colder spot or things that you want to use up first in the warmer spot. And you also want to make sure that you can see everything in your fridge as well.
That's
the most important part. Because
that is a big one.
Yeah. Sometimes you put the leftovers in the back left-hand corner, and then you never see them again until they're already composted.
Stuff in the Tupperware.
Yeah,
exactly. Oh, we've all had that moment, right?
Oh, yeah.
We've gone through, and it's a couple weeks. You maybe went on vacation and came back, and you're kind mm-hmm. of pushing, you know, the pasta sauce to the side, and you're like, "What's that in the corner? How long has that been there?"
That's what my dad calls science projects.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So one thing that I definitely use it, I practice with it. So I took like just a little small clear container, kind of like shoebox size,
mm-hmm.
That goes right next to one of the drawers. Or you could even use one of the drawers. And I kind of just put a label on it that says use first.
That's
so if
smart.
There's something that I have, and it seems it's so simple, right? It's like, oh, we'll just put it in front. But no, I have to do it. I have to label it. I have to put it in there. And it works. And yeah. whenever I go to the refrigerator, if I'm bored or if I'm hungry or need a snack, I look in that container first. And I'll feel guilty if, you know, it's like I have to make that cognizant, conscious effort to go with something else. And that does something that's kind of like that, you know, in behavioral economics, it's kind of like a nudge, right? So
yeah.
I'm being aware of it. And later I will definitely come back and remember.
I love that. And I have to tell you that it's so funny because literally this weekend, I realized that I had a couple of random extra pieces of produce that I don't normally have. And we have a little whiteboard on a refrigerator that I usually use to track groceries, you know, things that as we run out, I add a new item to the list just so I know. But what I wrote on it this week was, don't forget to eat these things.
Yeah.
So sort of a version of your container. But I kind of like the container idea because it's like a bin of snacks, like straight out the gate,
yeah.
which is nice.
And did your messaging work?
Yes, it did.
That's great.
I've eaten the things.
Yeah. And you can always invite friends over, right? So, like, I know, you know, I've as, you know, with the weather, I've decided to explore introversion. But whenever there's, you know, food that's left around, it's time to invite some friends over. And it's a great way to connect and say, hey, you know, I've got some things here. What do you guys want to make?
Yeah,
that's a great idea.
So there you go. Turning food waste into helping boost your social life.
Yeah.
I love it. All right, anything else to add? I think we got a lot of good tactics.
Yeah, lots of good tips and resources, and thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right, thanks so much. Today we've heard from Luke Dang from Food LLC. You can't manage what you can't measure, so start taking stock of what you waste and then make changes.
The Guesstimator is an online tool that helps you determine how much or how little food to prepare, depending on how voracious your guests' appetites are.
Learn more about food waste by checking out the films Wasted, Just Eat It, and the website Save the Food. Thank you for tuning in. Hear us every second Saturday at 9 a.m. and catch previous episodes at WPKN.org and SoundCloud.com.
If you have an idea for a future show, send us an email at livingthegreenlife@wpkn.org.